One of the most important questions in leadership isn't what you accomplish, but actually who you develop. Many ministry leaders spend the majority of their energy trying to grow their ministries. Jesus spent his energy growing people. He didn't measure the success of 3 years of public ministry by the size of the crowds that followed him. And the crowds were significant, but he measured it by the transformation he accomplished in the specific people that he invested in most deeply. 12 men formed into servant leaders through a process of intentional, relational, daily discipleship. And what did they do? They turned the world upside down. The five servant gifts of Ephesians 4 were not given to the church so that a small number of unusually anointed leaders could build impressive ministries. They were given to equip the saints, to develop ordinary members of the body into the kind of people through whom Christ continues his work in the world. These gifts are not the ministry. They serve the ministry, and they equip it, they develop it, and they multiply it. And today we're looking at seven specific leadership practices that move gifted leaders from building ministries to building people, which is in the end what building a genuinely healthy ministry actually requires. And we're talking about that today, right here, right now, and only on the Five Gifts podcast. You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast.
Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. My name is Charles Russell. I'm alongside Bruce Ritter, and this is Season 3, Episode 31. It's all about the Jesus process, seven leadership practices of the five servant gifts. Bruce, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Charles. We missed a week. I believe last week was the first episode miss, and we just had some extenuating circumstances. Again, this series has been so impactful for me, and I hope it's been impactful for our audience as we continue to talk about servant leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 through 12, that's the text that that really gives this entire series its foundation. Christ gave the church apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, all for the equipping of the saints, for the work of the ministry. For the building up of the body of Christ. And so, look, as in all things, the grammar really does matter. So the five gifts are not the ones doing the ministry while everyone else just kind of sits back and observes. They're the ones equipping everyone else to do the ministry, developing the capacity of the whole body rather than concentrating ministry in a small number of specially gifted individuals. And what that means is leadership in the fivefold framework is fundamentally a developmental process rather than just a platform. It's not primarily about what the leader delivers, but about what the leader produces in others. And the seven practices that we're going to cover today, those are the specific disciplines through which the developmental process actually happens. Through which gifted leaders become genuine equippers rather than just skilled performers. And so we're going to build today on the last two episodes. Episode 29 established that the servant identity that underlies every fivefold gift. Episode 30 explored the four oversight responsibilities. If you remember, spiritual, missional, organizational, and relational. And those give structure to servant leadership. And so today, we're going to get specific about the practices that make the theory operational.
Charles, you ever notice how the most effective people have seven practices?
Absolutely. It's biblical or something.
Yeah. In fact, the most highly effective people usually have seven practices. Well, before any of the seven practices that we're going to talk about today can function as they're designed to, there is a prior question that has to be answered honestly. And I think, Charles, it's a question that goes all the way down to the motive from which leadership flows. Without a clear answer to this question, the practices can become techniques of leadership rather than genuine expressions of servant leadership. So let's talk about those practices today. The first one is modeling servanthood. The first practice and the one that underlies all the others really is this one. Jesus did it. Paul did it. We see great biblical leaders that modeled servanthood. And the question underneath it is simply this: why am I leading? Why is it that I'm leading? Jesus washed his disciples' feet before he carried the cross. He served before he commissioned anybody, and he demonstrated the posture that he was calling others into before he asked them to inhabit it. In fact, John 13 tells us that Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things in his hand and that he had come from God and was going back to God, it was from that position of absolute security and absolute authority. He rises from that supper table. He takes off his outer garments. He wrapped himself in a towel and he washed feet. What's always stood out to me about that is that it was the security of his identity that made the servanthood possible. In fact, my former pastor, Ron McManus, who I highly esteem, a great leader in our movement, he always said that the most secure person in the room is the one who serves. And Jesus demonstrates that. He didn't wash feet to earn anything or to prove anything. He washed feet because it was what the moment required. And because there was nothing in his sense of himself that was threatened by kneeling and doing that. And that really is the model. And it has a specific application to each fivefold gift. Remember, all of the gifts of Christ are rooted in service. The apostolic leader who's modeling servanthood builds people before they build projects. They understand that human beings that they're developing are not the resources for the vision, but it's the very thing the vision is supposed to produce. The prophetic leader who's modeling servanthood serves restoration before correction. You know, they care about the persons that they're ministering to. They care about the revelation of God in their life and the weight of what they're speaking into people before they actually say it. You have the evangelistic leader, more than the metric, right, of evangelism, of the numbers that we're reaching. It's the evangelistic leader who's modeling how to love people before celebrating those numbers. The pastoral leader is one who's modeling servanthood by serving people before protecting their own comfort and institutional standing. Listen, the pastor is defined by Jesus as the one who lays down his life to go after the one. And so, again, the pastoral leader demonstrates that they, a lot of times, before they serve themselves, they're serving other people. And the teaching leader, of course, is someone who's modeling servanthood by understanding people before demonstrating knowledge. I think a teacher's satisfaction really comes from comprehension in the listener rather than the pats on the back and the quality of their delivery and the insightfulness of their content. And so each of these servant gifts, they reflect a servant king. And when it doesn't, when the gift is being exercised in service of the person carrying it rather than in the service of people that it was given for, boy, the gift really operates below its design.
Yeah, man, that's absolutely right, Bruce. And, you know, I think we'd both agree that servanthood, really, it forms the heart of every genuine leader. But motive alone doesn't sustain a ministry or a team or even a congregation. The emotional climate that a leader creates, things like, you know, the atmospheric conditions they establish through their own interior orientation, that really shapes what everyone around them is able to become. And so that really leads us into our second practice, which is practice number two, set healthy attitudes. And so leaders reproduce attitudes before they reproduce anything else. This is one of the most consequential and probably least discussed dynamics of organizational ministry life. Whatever the leader carries emotionally, whatever their dominant orientation toward the future, toward difficulty, toward the people they lead, that becomes the atmospheric norm for everyone in their sphere. So, you know, faith spreads, hope spreads, courage in the face of genuine uncertainty, that spreads, but also fear spreads. Anxiety will spread, cynicism, it spreads. So the leader who's chronically worried communicates worry to their team, not primarily through what they say, but through the quality of their presence. It's the way that they walk into a room, the way they respond to unexpected difficulty, the way they hold ambiguity. People really, they read these signals continuously and calibrate their own emotional orientation accordingly. So healthy fivefold leaders really develop the capacity to remain non-anxious in anxious environments. Not falsely positive, not performing a confidence that they don't actually carry, but genuinely grounded in a principle-centered, spirit-sustained steadiness that really doesn't require the circumstance to be favorable before they can function well. So apostolic leaders who carry this kind of steadiness, they create organizational cultures where people can take risks without the fear of catastrophic consequences if the risk doesn't pay off. Prophetic leaders who carry this, they create communities where truth can be spoken without it feeling like the atmosphere is about to collapse. Pastoral leaders who carry this create congregational environments where grief can be fully present without producing despair. Every servant gift has the capacity to calm the people around it, to bring a quality of presence that reduces anxiety rather than amplifying it. And that capacity is developed in the leader's interior life, in the spiritual practices, in the character formation that produce genuine groundedness rather than some kind of performed confidence.
Charles, I think you've really nailed it. I think it's clear that, you know, we talk about building a healthy attitude, but what you're doing is you're giving the gift of a presence that trusts God and trusts trust his gifts in their life. And I think the idea that a leader like that, a leader has to have an healthy attitude to build healthy attitudes in their team. And it really does. I think it really does contribute to a healthy emotional climate. It creates confidence in which things like genuine vision can be received and people can take ownership of it when they're in that kind of a climate. And because vision, real kingdom vision, requires people to believe that something different from what currently exists is possible. And I believe that belief is cultivated in an atmosphere that healthy leaders create. A third practice, and I think it's vital that we keep these in sequence, but the third practice is about casting kingdom vision. Vision in the kingdom context is more than an organizational goal. It's more than a strategic plan. And the reality is it is envisioned. It is a picture. It's vivid. It's specific. It has emotionally compelling language of the future that we believe God is building and that this community that you're leading is called to participate in building. And so the difference between a goal and a vision is the difference between a destination on a map and a story you can inhabit. A story is a beautiful way of understanding a vision. You're talking about a future story. Jesus consistently communicated through images. Think of that. The kingdom of heaven, he compared it to so many things. He compared it to a mustard seed. He compared it to a woman searching for a lost coin. The father running toward a prodigal returning son. These are not abstract descriptions of theological realities. They're pictures specific enough, I think, to generate longing and clear enough to orient action. People move toward pictures that they believe are genuinely possible. And so the leader's work, I would say, is to paint those pictures with enough specificity and enough genuine faith that the people around them really begin to see what you see as the leader. Now, the specific vision each fivefold gift is most naturally positioned to carry reflects the nature of the gift. So the apostolic leader sees future foundations, the structures, the systems that make the kingdom expression sustainable. The prophetic leader, man, this is their lane. They see God's preferred future in a state of covenant faithfulness to which God is calling the community. The distance between where they are and where God's leading them. An evangelistic leader, what do they see? Their vision is the harvest, the specific people who are not yet in the room, the fields that are ready, the doors that are open, the pathways for God's lost sons and daughters being created into the body of Christ. The pastoral leader sees healthy families and communities connected together, the quality of relationship and care that reflects the life of the body as God designed it. And the teaching leader sees transformed minds, sees real transformation happening at a personal level in people. They see people whose understanding of God and scripture and life has been genuinely changed by genuine encounters with the truth.
And here's what's really essential about how vision functions in fivefold teams. These five pictures, they're not competing. In fact, they're complementary. The apostles' vision of what to build, the prophet's vision of where the community needs to return, the evangelist's vision of who needs to be reached, the pastor's vision of the health of the people doing the reaching, and the teacher's vision of the theological clarity that gives the whole enterprise its coherence. These all belong together. And so a fivefold leadership team that's genuinely integrated is holding all five of these pictures simultaneously and allowing each one to inform and to correct the others. So vision that once it's cast, it requires repeated communication. People don't move forward or even toward a picture they've heard just once. They move toward a picture they've heard enough times in enough different contexts with enough genuine conviction that it's really become part of how they understand themselves and their community. The leader who casts vision once and then wonders why in the world the community is not moving has really misunderstood what vision communication requires. And so vision, it tells people where they're going. Development is what builds in them the capacity to get there. And all of all the seven practices, the developmental work is the one most directly connected to the purpose for which the five gifts were given. So let's talk about developmental work. And that's practice number four. We have to develop people. In Ephesians 4, it says the five gifts were given to equip the saints for the work of ministry, not to do the ministry on behalf of the saints while the saints observe, but to equip, to develop, to build capacity, to bring people to the point where they are genuinely capable of the ministry they're called to. This is the heart of the fivefold function, and it's the practice that most distinguishes a genuine equipper from a gifted performer. So when we think about what 5 years of genuine development under a fivefold leadership produce, we can organize it around four qualities. The first is generous heartedness. People who give rather than consume. They're oriented toward contribution rather than toward what ministry can provide for them. The second is relational connection. People who are embedded in genuine biblical community rather than simply attending a program. People for whom the church is not just a service they use, but a community they belong to and are responsible for. The third is an outward focus. People for whom the mission to the person not yet in the room is not the pastor's department, but a personal sense of call and responsibility. And the fourth is a genuinely worship-centered life, not attendance at worship services, but the kind of life in which the presence of God is genuinely central, is genuinely sought, and genuinely transformative. So the diagnostic question that every fivefold leader should sit with regularly is this: if someone spent 5 years under my leadership, what would I hope Christ has produced in them? And am I actually building the practices in the community that would produce those outcomes? Or am I primarily producing people who are well served by what I deliver?
Charles, that's the uncomfortable practice of servant leadership. The idea of developing people, that's hard. People are messy. And but you know, you're messy. I'm messy. We all have rough edges. We all have parts of our flesh that Christ is still helping us overcome. But why is that so vital? Why is it so vital to spend time developing people? Well, because it builds trust. And development, it can't happen without trust. You have to bring that element, I think, into how you develop people. And really, trust in a leadership context is expressed in a very specific way. That's when we begin to share authority. And the leader who develops people but then retains all the responsibility and all the decision-making, they haven't yet completed the developmental process, and they haven't really come to the point that development is for. So practice five really addresses that directly. So when we talk about sharing authority, remember, Jesus never hoarded leadership. He multiplied it. He took 12 ordinary people with no institutional credential, no organizational authority, and progressively transferred to them the responsibility for carrying the work he had begun. Now remember, Charles, what were they focused on? They were focused on titles. They believed that Jesus was coming into a kingdom and they would find their seat. And so they started jostling and jockeying for position. But Jesus was focused on not the title that he would give them, but the ministry that he would entrust to them, the serving, the leadership. And so the progression is as simple, really, as it is demanding. And you probably have heard this before. It's a common theme in learning to delegate and share authority. And it's simply this. The pattern is I do, and then you watch. And then I do, and then you help. And here's the switch. You do, and I help. I coach you. I mentor you. I assist you as you do the work. And then you do, and I watch, and I'm watching reflectively. I'm watching, and I'm looking for ways to help refine you as you are actually doing the work. Each stage requires more trust from the leader and more responsibility from the developing leader. In the pattern, the person you're developing, they're slowly taking on the responsibility that you're demonstrating to them. And I think the final stage requires something that many gifted leaders find genuinely difficult. That's the willingness to watch someone else do what you used to do without stepping back in to correct or take over. Now, that's different from coaching. That's different from mentoring someone. You're just looking for ways to reflectively help them refine what they do, not constantly pull the reins and say, stop doing it that way. Again, that's a very... that's a very art form of leadership. I think the specific expression of this in each of the fivefold gifts reflects the nature of the gift, just as we've been describing in each of these steps. Apostolic leaders share authority by releasing other leaders, by building not a single apostolic vision, but a network of apostolically gifted people who are developing their foundations. Prophetic leaders share authority by trusting emerging prophetic voices, creating space for others in the community to discern and speak, rather than positioning themselves as, you know, that singular channel through which prophetic insight is going to flow. Evangelistic leaders share authority by mobilizing witnesses, equipping the whole organization for the work of sharing the gospel, rather than doing evangelism on behalf of a passive congregation. A pastoral leader share authority by empowering shepherds, developing the caring and the shepherding capacity of the community, rather than maintaining a system in which all pastoral care flows through them. And that's difficult for pastors. I want every pastor that's listening to listen to us clearly. You are not enough to build the network of care in your church and in your community that's necessary to help it become healthy. You've got to build under shepherds with you that will serve with you, care pastors among your congregation. Charles, I want to just say that when we describe these gifts, we're actually talking about the whole body of Christ functioning in these areas of giftedness. Teaching leaders, they share authority by reproducing teachers. The highest satisfaction is not a brilliant lecture, but a former student who is now teaching others with genuine depth and effectiveness. It follows Jesus's pattern. He says in the book of Luke, chapter 9, he says, when a student is fully trained, they'll be like the teacher. And so ministry demonstrates that. It grows when leadership is shared. And leaders who share authority are not diminishing themselves. They're demonstrating the most advanced form of the developmental gift, the capacity to multiply what they carry rather than simply exercising it.
Yeah. Shared authority without accountability, it produces chaos rather than health. And we want health rather than chaos. So development requires not only trust, but also the loving, courageous engagement with the quality of what is being produced. And so that really sets us up for the sixth practice of this episode we're in today. And the sixth practice is this: pursue excellence. Excellence in the kingdom context is, we're not talking about perfection. Excellence is faithful stewardship. It's the genuine, sustained effort to be good stewards of what Christ has entrusted, which really includes the quality of the work being done in His name. The servant gifts carry responsibility not just to do ministry, but to do it well, with a kind of care and intentionality that reflects the seriousness of what is genuinely at stake. So pursuing excellence in a team or in a congregational context, it requires the willingness to have courageous conversations about quality and effectiveness. The leader who only affirms, who never engages honestly with what's not working, who avoids the discomfort of addressing underperformance or misalignment, they're not being kind. They're being conflict avoidant in a way that ultimately it costs the people they're supposed to be developing. Genuine care for someone includes genuine feedback about how they're doing and even about what they could do better. So the distinction between coaching and condemning is really essential here. Condemnation delivers a verdict about a person. Coaching delivers feedback about a performance. It's specific, honest, future-oriented, and it's delivered from genuine investment in the person's growth. Every servant gift, rightly expressed, protects Christ's mission through this kind of loving accountability. The apostle who holds the team to the standard of what genuine foundations require, the prophet who names the gap between where the community is and where it's called to be with love and courage. The teacher who gives honest assessment of how well the truth is being understood and applied. Excellence is not demanding, it is stewarding.
That's a good point, Charles. I think that's something that leaders can tend to lose focus on because the performance is really crucial. And we need to make sure we're not confusing that with the person themselves. And I just love what you share there, the difference between condemnation and coaching. And it really does build an atmosphere for excellence in work. I think excellence in the work is sustained partly by the organizational and technical quality of the work itself, But it's also sustained by something deeper and simpler and often overlooked. It's the sense that people doing the work are genuinely seen. They're valued. They're appreciated. And I think that's the seventh and the last practice we'll talk about today. How do we show appreciation? I think of all the seven gifts, this is one of the most frequently neglected by leaders who are driven and focused on vision and development and excellence. And to neglect it is rather costly because people flourish where they're genuinely valued. They don't flourish where they're not. And I think we see this pattern in Jesus. Obviously, he consistently affirmed people around him with specificity and genuine care. He'll say, well done. Your faith has made you well. Come follow me. That's an invitation that communicated profound value to fishermen who had no reason to expect that a rabbi walking the shoreline would choose them, especially at their ages. He noticed people, and not in a performative way, but genuinely, and he saw what was the real value in people, and he named it. And this is a practice that is simple to describe, but it requires genuine intention, I think, to maintain. Celebrating volunteers is not just as a group, but really specifically honoring the individual. The person who showed up early and stayed late, the person who served in a role no one sees, the person who gave something costly that very few people know about. Encouraging leaders who are carrying the weight, the pastoral team member who absorbed a difficult conversation and handled it with grace, the teacher who prepared carefully for a session that did not go as planned. Really speaking into the life of people who are in the middle of a difficult season, that's not false positivity. That's genuine affirmation of what is real and valuable in them. And I think every one of the servant gifts become a source of this kind of encouragement. The apostolic leader celebrates the foundation laying work of people who are building things well. Maybe not to be visible for years, but those systems are being put into place. We want to celebrate that and honor the work that people are doing to make that possible. The prophetic leader who affirms with the courage that it takes to receive and act on a hard word. The evangelistic leader who celebrates every conversation, every spiritual conversation, not just every conversion, but the people that are doing the work of planting and sowing the seed, not just the harvesting. The pastoral leader who names the faithfulness they've observed in the people they shepherd. Maybe the teacher who genuinely shows delight and they express it when they understand that a student is beginning to break through to transformation. Again, leadership that appreciates is leadership that multiplies. People who feel genuinely valued are more willing to risk, more willing to give, more willing to stay. I would say this. I think there's an equation here that I'd like to give everyone. It's the more you're willing to encourage, the more you're going to find people that have run to the wall with you. The atmosphere of genuine appreciation is one of the most powerful accelerants of the developmental process. And it's one of the most reproducible because people who have been genuinely appreciated tend to become people who genuinely appreciate others.
Wow, that's powerful, Bruce. And man, you have done it again. I don't know if everyone else caught that gem you mined for us right there, but man, you said it well. Leadership that appreciates is leadership that multiplies. That what a great statement. That is true. It's powerful for sure. Well, let's hold these seven practices together and see what they can kind of collectively describe. Again, servanthood, it really forms the heart from which everything else flows. Healthy attitudes shape the atmospheric conditions in which people can grow. Kingdom vision provides the direction that gives development its purpose. Developing people builds the human capacity through which the mission advances. Shared authority multiplies the leadership that the mission requires. The pursuit of excellence stewards what Christ has entrusted with genuine care. And appreciation sustains the people who are doing the work. Now, let's just take a moment and notice what's consistent across all seven of these practices. The focus moves away from the leader and toward the people the leader is called to equip. Every practice and its genuine expression is truly oriented toward what happens in others rather than toward what is produced in the leader's own ministry. And that's not an accident. That is truly the design of the fivefold gifts as Ephesians 4 describes them.
Yeah, and here's a question I think that's worth carrying into the week with you from our podcast today, and I think it's worth answering specifically rather than genuinely. Think about these seven practices, and of these seven, which one needs the greatest attention in your leadership right now? Not the one that's most interesting to think about, but really bring into focus the one that, if you're honest, is the most underdeveloped in how you're actually leading. Maybe you're serving the vision more than you're serving people. That takes guts to acknowledge that. Maybe you're casting vision without doing the developmental work that would build people's capacity to move toward it. Listen, I'm sure they're leaders that are going to fall on this podcast, and that's going to be you, that you're casting a lot of vision, but you're not developing the capacity of your people to move toward it. Maybe you're developing people, but not releasing them into genuine authority. Maybe you're sharing authority without maintaining the loving accountability that excellence requires. Or maybe the appreciation that sustains people has been crowded out by the urgency of the week, and you need to take time and connect with the people that are helping you and express some genuine honor and appreciation. Whatever the invitation is, it points the same direction toward the people that you have been entrusted to equip rather than toward the ministry you're trying to build. Because the ministry, the genuinely healthy, genuinely fruitful, authentically Christ-reflecting ministry is the people. When every servant gift is functioning with the heart of Christ toward people it's given for, then the church can grow into the maturity and unity and the fullness of Christ that Ephesians 4 describes as the goal. Listen, that has never been about successful ministries or impressive leaders. It's always been about a mature body of Christ that genuinely reflects the one who gave it everything he had. Listen, we're glad that you've been with us today. If you've enjoyed the episode, like, follow, subscribe to our podcast, share it with someone else. If you think this has been helpful to you, it might be helpful to someone else. You can also connect with us if you want to take the next step in your own personal development as a leader. We can help you. If you'll reach out to Charles at charlesrusselltraining.com or charlesrussellministries.com, you can also reach out to me at coachingcardia.com. We would love to help you and just walk with you through the process of developing the leadership practices that can build genuine disciples and help you begin to extend into the great story that God has for you and your congregation or your marketplace ministry. And until then, we'll see you next time on the Five Gifts podcast.
You've been listening to the Five Gifts podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments that give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.